Today I'm here with John Berardi, who runs Precision Nutrition. And these guys, it's focused around nutrition and how to get your nutrition really dialed in, which, as I think a lot of people are starting to realize, if you want to get in shape, nutrition is going to be a very, very, very big component of that. They also do a lot of coaching and stuff with the bodybuilding industry as well as other professional athletes, and focused on both on getting in shape as well as maintaining a lot of physique. So, John, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate you inviting me on. I know you're typically interviewing successful internet business people, marketers, and CEOs. So it's cool to make an appearance and represent the fitness and nutrition industry today.
Well, you're welcome. So I've just got to ask the burning question that I have on my mind.
Okay.
Is it true that you actually it's a stand-in in all these photos we see of you, and you actually look like Pee Wee Herman?
That it probably depends on who you ask. Actually, I think I'm quite a handsome man, and that my physique is a little bit superior to Pee Wee's. But you never know. I mean, I know on the internet sometimes people aren't always kind, so they might see one of my pictures and actually think that I do look like Pee Wee Herman. Who knows? Try not to let it get to me.
Well, people can see the photos here. I haven't actually met John, but I'm pretty sure it's him. So other people have said this. So maybe can you tell us a little bit about, tell us a bit your story and who you are and where you've come from?
Yeah, well, as you said, you know, currently I run the nutrition research and coaching company Precision Nutrition. And our website's one of the most popular in this area. We have about 200,000 newsletter subscribers and about 500,000 unique visitors coming to our site each month. And, you know, in terms of what qualifies us to do this, or, you know, me specifically, you know, my training originally, I have an undergraduate degree in pre-med, and then I went on and did master's training in exercise physiology and earned a PhD in exercise and nutritional biochemistry. And that's my background, but, you know, my team members are equally well-trained and sometimes better trained than me. We have MDs on our team and other PhDs in different areas from psychology to physiology. So, you know, that's a bit of our academic stuff. And then in terms of, you know, what we do, you know, although we get a lot of attention for working with elite athletes, so we have contracts in, you know, the NBA, the NHL, NFL, and we work with a lot of individual athletes, you know, still there's so few athletes in the world, relatively speaking. 95% of what we do is work with recreational exercisers who want to finally get a handle on this area of their lives, this fitness and body comp thing. You know, they want to look good, they want to feel good, they want to perform good, even if it's not in sports. It's just, you know, waking up and having a successful day. So that's kind of where we spend a lot of our time, helping those people get a handle on that, which is actually becoming more of a challenge for our society, it seems like, almost every day.
So, I mean, there's a lot of places out there. I mean, I've been trying to get in shape for a long time, and, you know, people say, well, did you go to a nutritionist? There's a lot of places out there to learn about nutrition. There's Weight Watchers. You can go and get on a raw food diet. You can do paleo. I mean, you can read the book, Why Do French Women Don't Get Fat. There's all of these techniques. I mean, so what's different about you guys?
Well, you know, I think the thing that's different is oftentimes the presentation of the material comes in like a book format, which is what you're suggesting. And if you go on Amazon, I think last time I checked, it was in the six figures how many books are out there on nutrition. And the problem with that sort of presentation is that it assumes that a person's limiting factor for getting in, you know, the best shape of their lives is information alone. Right? So if I read this book, I will acquire a certain piece of information that I don't currently know, and that will be the big sort of linchpin for changing my life. And we know that in almost any field of endeavor, knowledge isn't always the limiting factor. And in nutrition and fitness, that knowledge is rarely the limiting factor. So what we do differently is, although we, you know, do have information presentation in book format and stuff like that, we have an entire community that backs that up. So when you say, all right, well, I read this information, how do I apply it? how can I determine what my other limiting factors might be, whether they're my structure, whether it's my relationship with food. And I know that sounds like a really ambiguous kind of thing, but we all have some kind of relationship to food and to exercise, what we believe about food, what we believe about exercise, what we believe about ourselves. And those things can be bigger limiting factors than just knowing how much carbs to eat. So, you know, what we do differently is we really dig into both sides, the physiology and the psychology, and we provide a really, you know, expansive support community where people can come on and ask questions of me and of my other teammates. And, you know, I know, Adrian, you participate in this community. That one of the more valuable things, I think, although at first people think, well, you know, great, I'll get to ask John questions. But one of the awesome and more valuable parts is actually interacting with other people going through the process. And I know, Adrian, you do that pretty extensively, and I know that that's another huge value for people. So when they come interact with Precision Nutrition, they get this experience. We call it social support sometimes. And I think that makes a huge, huge difference.
So the reason I invited John here, because I haven't done a nutrition interview. I mean, John's running an internet company, basically, but I've looked at nutrition in a lot of different areas, and I've tried a lot of different stuff, and I found some things that help, but I still haven't been able to really get my weight dialed in. I still don't have it under control, but the things that I've been learning through Precision Nutrition are so far in front now of anything else that I've seen that I wanted to bring John on here. And the way I was explaining it to a friend yesterday who's thinking of doing a little competition to do a weight loss and get in shape competition with me is it feels like there's like literally like 20,000 little things that you have to learn, all of these little pieces and tweaks and things that you have to understand, and yep. But you don't know what they all are. And I feel like maybe I've learned about half of them so far, and I'm still cracking away at it, and there's still probably, you know, I might have gotten through 10,000 of them, but there's still probably 10,000 of them out there. And I'm getting a lot of these through your forums, which is really interesting. And so I've got a little log in your forums where I'm posting about my updates as I'm experimenting with stuff. But what's been a little shocking to me is that I've got all these, like, weightlifters that are now giving me feedback on how to get in better shape. I hadn't quite expected that. I went through Weight Watchers about 6 months ago and sat in all these meetings with all these, you know, 50-year-old housewives and gay dudes, and they'd all be sitting there talking about how they resisted eating another piece of cheesecake. And that was sort of the social support I got there. And, you know, it was interesting and it was nice, but, man, I mean, it's nothing compared to what I'm getting in your forums. So good job on putting it together.
Well, thanks. You know, the Internet has progressed, and I mean, so dramatically. I remember actually when I was a master's student, I didn't even have an email account because no one was doing that back in that time. And, you know, nowadays we can have all these kind of support communities and stuff. And it was probably in 2006 that we actually started our online forum. And we went back and forth on that quite a bit because at the time, the Internet was still a little more Wild Westy than even it is today, and forums were usually these terrible, terrible places where people just went on to either puff themselves up or to drag other people down. And so we had a real challenge with that when we first started. We didn't want our community to be that way. So, you know, we made it a members-only community, so if you've purchased a product of ours, then you can participate. And then we were pretty relentless about pruning out bad behavior, if you want to call it that. And so the interesting thing is I thought we were going to have to be on forum police duty for the rest of our business life here. But the thing is, after we established about a year of that kind of behavior and expectation, the forum became this really great self-organizing, self-policing system where we didn't have to lord over it anymore. The people who were attracted to it were just super cool and super helpful people who believed in what we were doing and our mission. So you're experiencing the effects of that, just a really cool, really supportive group of people who many of them could be experts, quote unquote, in their own right if they decided to go out and start an information business or whatever. But rather than doing that, they're just here because they're a little bit further along in the journey than you might be or someone new the community might be, and they're so willing to help. And it's really amazing, and you can't, you know, overstate the value of that. And you made a really brilliant point, and this is something we try and drive home all the time to people, and they don't really get it until they actually get knee deep in this journey, which is improving your nutrition or your exercise habits, really, it's not one project to take on, or it's not one habit to change. And people think that's the case. So they say, I want to get my nutrition handled. Dr. Berardi, will you give me a diet to follow? And my answer is typically no. No, I won't. And that turns a lot of people off at first until I give them the explanation as to why. And still, even after they understand why, they don't want to believe me. In the nutrition industry, that's par for the course. It's, I'm going to hand you this diet. I want you to post it on your fridge, and I want you to follow it relentlessly for the next however long until you're in shape. And that sounds nice, and it sounds easy, and it sounds maybe like something we should be doing. But the problem is, like you said, to actually go from where you are today to being able to follow that diet relentlessly every day when life is throwing all kinds of curveballs at you is probably, you know, if not hundreds, but thousands of small changes every single day that have to take place. So instead of saying, hey, Adrian, can you follow this diet from now on? I said, can you do 500 changes to your food and exercise habits starting tomorrow forever? That's exactly what I'd be asking.
And you don't know what they all, and you don't know what they all are yet. But, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, another huge component of what we teach is sort of this one habit at a time approach. And one of my favorite books that sort of outlines one guy's journey on this is The Power of Less. And the idea is that when we try and take on these new projects in life, and maybe it's getting a handle on our body fat, or maybe it's learning to play the guitar or something like that, we want to take on as much as possible, and we want to just crush it. Like, I'm going to put the rest of my life on hold so I can figure this part out, and I'm going to spend the next 3 months on it, and I'm going to absolutely crush it. And what usually happens is that we do spend the first little bit, maybe the first few weeks, maybe it's the first month, maybe we're supremely disciplined, and we spend the first 2 months completely crushing it. The problem is that the rest of our lives starts to knock on the door and say, I'd like back in, and maybe you have a family, or maybe you have a business, or maybe you have some other hobbies. And when those things start calling for some attention, you really get conflicted because you're like, man, I'm working so hard on this nutrition thing, but I'm neglecting the rest of my life. And that's where people usually bail. That's where they usually give up, and that's why the failure rate on dieting is so terrible, because it requires such an all-encompassing effort that it actually squeezes out all these other important things from your life. So we take a completely different approach. We make it as easy as possible, and we actually try and break the habits down into sort of singular, you know, single-serving habits, and then we build them up over time. I mean, you've heard about our coaching program, and in our coaching program, that's exactly what we do. People work with us for about a year in duration, and every 2 to 4 weeks, they get a new habit to follow. And whenever they get their new habits, there's sort of like a universal cry, wait a second, this is too easy. I can do this. Give me more. But the problem is, when you get more, you get the problem we talked about earlier. And when you keep it as easy as possible, that's exactly what we're going for. In fact, when I give someone a new habit and they say, oh, God, of course I can do this. This is super easy. That's when I know we've hit on the right approach. It has to be easier than people think. And although that feels like it might be slow at first, it accumulates really, really quickly. It's the snowball effect, if you want to call it. And eventually, the speed builds up so quickly that it's way faster than if you would have come out of the gate so hard as most people want to. So that's kind of a different approach. But I love the fact that you bring up all these little mini or micro changes that are necessary, because that's exactly what it is. And if you want to get a handle on this aspect of your life, you have to start building your capacity to do those changes over time. You can't just start doing 10,000 changes tomorrow and expect it to stick.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so I've broken the rules a bit, and I'm doing things the wrong way, because I started with PN back in about in February, and I basically implemented the habits as best as I could see them, and I think I mostly did, but it still wasn't quite working for me. And then, as you may remember, I posted on your forums, and I was a little bit mad because it was not working, and I wasn't gaining weight, which is a good thing, but I wasn't losing weight. And
right.
So you have this diet called the Get Shredded Diet. and yep. there's all these like big warnings over it, you know, like a big like, do not open unless your body fat is under 15%, all of this kind of stuff. And I was like, screw it, I'm going to, it's, you know, it's my kitchen, I can do what I want, John can't come and actually physically stop me. I was a little bit intimidated when I started it, but I'm like, nope, I'm just going to try it, even though I'm not a bodybuilder, because I looked at the diet, and because I looked at what people were doing. So basically, this Get Shredded diet is for bodybuilders to get from around 12 to 15% body fat down to the competition level, right? So like,
that's right.
It could be 3% to 8% or something like that.
Yeah.
And I looked at it, and I looked at what some of these guys were eating, and it's just a whole bunch of whole foods, and you know, it's very bulky stuff at around 1,600 calories a day. And I'd been looking at my calories anyway, and my calories are probably only around 2,200 to 2,500 calories a day. And so I was like, well, I mean, it's all whole foods. It can't really be that bad for me. Why don't I just try it? And so I did. And it, like, set up a whole lot of explosions in my mind when I started to see how you designed this. Because it's designed to be low carb, high fat diet, and then suddenly I started to see all of the bulk in this food, and I started to see then how you'd set up the macros of the diet, and then I started to understand about how I can get my carbs through vegetables and how that works, and then not eat fruit, and just a whole lot of things came together. And so, amazing job on the GSD, and I'm interested if you could maybe tell us a little bit about how you came up with it and where mm-hmm. it came from.
Well, you know, the Get Shredded diet is really kind of just an artifact of what, you know, the top physique manipulation specialists in the world, which are bodybuilders, have done for a very, very long time. You know, when people who are recreational exercisers think of bodybuilders, they think, that's not me. I don't want that to be me. But really, the one thing we can take away from bodybuilders is that for, you know, dozens and dozens of years since there have been, you know, physique competitions of this style, you have these people who typically in about 10 to 12 weeks, so, you know, under 3 months, can take their body fat from what is kind of normal, so 12 to 15% is sort of our reference college-aged male body fat percentage, to just totally ripped, you know, like almost no body fat left except for the essential body fat around their organs. Now, not everyone might want to achieve that level of leanness, but you have to respect the fact that these outliers here, these people who can take themselves in under 3 months from, you know, normal to completely ripped, like almost no fat left on their body while preserving all of their muscle, that's kind of cool, and we have to think, what can you learn from that as a recreational exerciser or just the average guy who want to look better? And so with the Get Shredded diet, I really just kind of looked at what bodybuilders have been doing for a very long time when they get ready for their competitions, which is cut carbs, increase protein, exercise in a certain way, use their macronutrients effectively so that they can be in a calorie deficit, so that they're eating less than they're burning, and still kind of get all the nutrition that they need. And that's a really difficult part. And that's the problem with a lot of fad diets nowadays. Fad diets generally find ways to trick you to eat less. And that's really the fundamental, consistent pattern with all fad diets or any successful diet, to be quite honest. It finds tricks to get you to eat less food. And when you eat less food, you tend to lose weight. The problem with a lot of the fad diets is that they don't take into account that you need nutrients. So if you just start eating less, but you get less vitamin C and vitamin D and magnesium and other things, your body will actually crash. You'll start to function improperly. You won't have enzymes and cofactors and nutrients that are really, really critical. So what we tried to do with Get Shredded diet was simply put someone in a calorie deficit, control their carbs and their insulin, which is a hormone that helps us to get lean, and still provide enough nutrient-dense food. So food that provides all those vitamins and minerals so that you can go through this process of getting super lean without having a nutritional deficiency or a hormonal crash. So that's kind of the difference between what we're doing with Get Shredded and a lot of the fad diets out there, if you will.
How low body fat have you gone to on it?
Personally, now I'm a bit of an outlier. You know, I've been athletic. Competing in sports ever since I was about 16, and I actually am a classic ectomorph. So for people who aren't familiar with those somatotypes, ectomorphs tend to be small boned, really thin, as I joke in some of my products, I was the skinny bastard growing up. That was that was my thing. I was really skinny and scrawny. I graduated high school. I was 135 pounds at about 5'9", and I was pretty small. But then I got interested in sport. I got interested in nutrition, and so I started doing all this stuff. And you know, now I maintain a lot more muscle mass than that. But for me, you know, I can get lean pretty easily with the right type of approach. It takes me a little less time than other people. So for me, I mean, I've been measured at about 4% body fat with an ultrasound measurement device doing this type of approach. I don't expect everyone would or should try and get to that level, but, you know, the average guy nowadays is somewhere between 20 and 25% body fat. So taking someone who's walking around at that percentage body fat and getting them down to 10 or 12% would be a tremendous boon, not only in their health, but in the way that they look and feel. I mean, a guy who's about 10% body fat will find extra opportunities to take his shirt off. You know what I mean? A guy who's at 25% body fat will wear a second shirt. So there's this kind of, you know, very aesthetic component to it, but there's also a huge health component, because I'm a strong believer that losing body fat while preserving muscle is one of the biggest things the average man or woman can do to improve their health profile. I mean, we talk lots about, oh, should we increase healthy fats, or, you know, increase our fruits and vegetables, and all those things help a little. But the biggest impact on things like blood cholesterol and liver function and blood glucose or blood sugar management, the biggest thing you can do to impact that is lose body fat in a healthy way where you're getting enough nutrition.
How did you feel when you're at 4%?
Actually, when
I mean, I've talked with people about this, and they're like, well, that's insane. Like, it's got to be really bad for you.
Yeah, well, the truth is, you know, whenever doing a bodybuilding sort of approach to getting as lean as possible, you don't expect to maintain 4% body fat. It's very difficult to maintain it because you're in a negative energy balance. And when you get to either a certain body weight, and scientists aren't quite sure yet whether it's a body weight threshold or a body fat threshold or just a negative energy balance that's too big. So let's say you're burning 2,000 calories a day, but you're only eating 1,000. So your negative energy balance is 1,000 calories, so you're 1,000 under what you're actually burning. So we're not sure if it's that number, that deficit, if it's your body fat or your body weight that actually causes you to feel bad. But when you get to some certain threshold of leanness or calorie deficit, you start feeling really bad. And there's a whole bunch of great physiology that describes it. And what's really essentially happening is your body's calling for you to get back to some healthy set point. So it wants to be heavier. It wants to have more body fat. It wants to have a bit more energy each day. So it sends hunger signals. It sends hormonal changes. It slows your metabolism. So that's kind of the danger with getting that lean sometimes. It's that a bunch of physiological systems will start to slow down to try and preserve your body weight, because fundamentally your body thinks, oh man, if we keep going in this direction, we're going to be dead soon. And
I mean, are you able to work, or are you just like sitting around hungry all the time? And for a normal person, can you tell us like how we could understand how it feels?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. The getting down to 4% on a get shredded diet type of approach, you start to feel very mentally foggy towards the end. I qualify the mental capacity in two different ways. If you want to break it down really simply, and we know the brain doesn't exactly work this way, but if you think of like left brain and right brain type of activities, left brain being your highly analytical and right brain being your synthetic or creative, I find that when you're getting that lean, your left brain stuff is usually pretty good. So your analytical stuff is pretty well intact. In fact, it can sometimes lead to a heightened focus where you literally can just zoom in on a particular project distraction-free. Huh. On the other hand, what you gain in that sort of mental capacity, you lose in creative and synthetic capacity. So when I'm talking about working here, for example, you know, I do a bunch of different tasks related to what we do professionally. If I'm doing like statistical analyses or I'm doing article editing, you know, these kind of analytical type of things, critical things, then I'm okay when I'm dieting and lean like that. However, human interaction suffers, you know, when it requires like real-time collaboration. Also things like article writing, so the creative process suffers as well. So I feel like different parts of your brain are activated differentially when you get leaner and you get into a negative energy balance, and it's actually quite fascinating to see. And I don't know if you've experienced any of these kind of shifts yourself as you've been getting leaner.
Yeah, I mean, there's days where I don't feel as good. That certainly happens. Is that similar? I mean, when you're losing weight, is that similar to how it feels when you're down at 4%? I mean, sure, it's not quite the same, though.
Yeah, I mean, what I just described is basically what you start to feel when you get down to 4%. The other thing, and this is actually really, really relevant to continued weight loss, is when you get down to that level of body fat percentage, what typically happens is your non-exercise activities start to really suffer. You start to want to do less physical activity. Now, if you're on a training plan where you go to the gym 3 or 5 days a week, you'll be able to get to the gym, you'll be able to give it a good effort, and no problem. So when people are in that type of situation where they're getting super lean, in a calorie deficit, working out 3 to 5 times a week, they feel like, hey, I'm still doing the same amount of activity, but usually they're not. If we actually were to track the number of steps they take in a day or the amount of calories they burn outside of the gym, it starts to plummet very dramatically. And the interesting part is most of the calories that we burn in a week aren't burned in the gym. They're burned through daily living, daily activity. So a great example of this is as you tend to get leaner, as the day progresses, you find yourself sitting and lying on the couch a heck of a lot more. And it's simply because your body is slowing down its desire to move because you're losing weight either too rapidly or you're getting at the lower bottom threshold. So it's really interesting because, you know, there's an approach that's becoming popular right now called intermittent fasting. And, our team is experimenting with this pretty extensively. I just did about 6 months of intermittent fasting experiments. And we have a pilot group of about 40 clients going through different intermittent fasting experiments right now. And in one model, you simply don't eat for 24 hours. Okay, and I'm not necessarily recommending it. I'm just saying that's what some people do. And the thing a lot of them will say that they're doing is they're just laying around all day. So I'll sleep a lot. I'll lay on the couch. I'll watch movies, whatever. And it's really, really interesting. Because that's what the body is driven to do in a big energy deficit, to simply move more. So they're kind of canceling out some of the intermittent fasting deficit because they're just moving less and burning fewer calories in a day. So it's a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's relevant to people trying to get a handle on the weight loss thing. And there's a couple of great writers who've been talking about this concept lately, which is when you undereat too much, you simply move less, and your body finds a way to not lose weight. So our bodies are pretty dynamic that way. So if you start eating too little, your body will start moving so little that you won't be in a deficit anymore, and you'll stop losing weight. So it's very interesting, and others are talking about sort of the opposite effect, where some people who might be trying a nutrition and exercise intervention for the first time, and we've talked about this extensively on our site. Some people think that if you just start exercising, you're going to get in shape. And it's not true. Data has shown very, very consistently that humans are compensators, which means when we start exercising and burning a lot more calories, we simply start eating more calories to compensate for that. So either it's subconscious, you know, we're not counting, so we don't really know what's happening, and it just kind of creeps up. Or it's conscious. We give ourselves little rewards. Hey, I just kicked butt in the gym today. I deserve some X, Y, or Z.
Hamburgers. I deserve buffalo wings. Exactly.
That's it. You know, so, people used to go to exercise to build up an appetite, right? And that's interesting, but it's actually a danger of, you know, our modern view on exercise, which is I'll just join the gym, get a personal trainer, and I'll get in shape. I'll lose weight. But you have to remember, when you're in the gym, you're building up an appetite. So how are you going to combat that? And there's a bunch of strategies, and I think we do it pretty well with some of our nutrition advice. But this just illustrates some of the complexity of getting in shape. But when I say complexity, it's not actually that hard if you have an internally consistent system to follow. And that's the problem with just picking up a book off the shelf, because it usually just talks about some food stuff and some food knowledge, and it's not an internally consistent system of doing something, of taking these action steps and habits. And that's where a lot of people fall short.
Interesting. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about supplements. Most people I've started talking to supplements about have the same reaction that I have always had, which is, hell no, I'm not touching any of that stuff. Like, you know, these guys are all just getting kickbacks, and I'm not letting them put that, like, crazy stuff into my body. And I've been, like, very skeptical, you know, when I started, used to talk about Greens Plus. And I was like, man, he's getting kickbacks on that. He's getting kickbacks on his Surge, like, supplements, and all of these protein shakes have all these problems, and people, like, get allergies to them, and, like, no, like, you know, this John guy, like, supplements are bad. And so when I started doing the GSD, which, you know, again, you're not supposed to do, but I'm doing it, one of the things is that you do have a bunch of supplements. And so I just said, well, screw it, I'll just try them all. And so I'm now taking BCAAs, I'm taking creatine, I take ZMA at night to help me sleep. I've been playing around with all of them, and I've been like, holy cow, like these really help. Like they make a big difference, and it's a little bit shocking. Well, can you talk a little bit about that and how those work?
Well, the first part, I would love to be getting kickbacks on all the supplements. I'm not, but I wish I was, because
you know, it doesn't state on your site. You should have it very clearly, like all over your site. Like, we don't take any endorsements from any like supplement companies, because that wasn't clear to me.
Yeah, well, maybe that is a good idea to clarify that. I just never assumed that people would assume that we were making money from this, because it just simply doesn't work that way. But nevertheless, I mean, either I wish I was, or I wish people didn't assume that, one or the other. But, you know, when it comes to supplements, I mean, especially with our site, there's a fine line we walk, because I think probably for the recreational exerciser who's just using some best practices of nutrition, there's very, very few supplements that you actually need. For example, right now with what I'm doing with my own personal food and exercise plan, I really only take about four supplements. I take a multivitamin, a vitamin D. I take a branched chain amino acid, which is just amino acids around my workout. And that's generally it. I use Greens Plus also, which is sort of like a powdered greens drink. And that's really all I'll use. And really, that's very, very basic stuff. You know, most of it we can get from food, but we probably aren't eating enough food to get it in some cases. And if we did eat enough food to get it, we'd be overweight. So it's kind of like a surrogate for calories in some cases when we're eating essential nutrients. The other line you have to walk, though, when you're in the business that we're in, is that a lot of athletes come to our site, and we work with a lot of elite athletes. And for them, supplements actually do become critical, because oftentimes they're traveling very extensively, don't have access to enough calories or nutrient-dense food when they're on the road. A great example would be some of the Olympic teams I work with. I mean, these athletes have, these sports organizations have very low budgets. The athletes are essentially staying in the equivalent of hostels. They're maybe getting fed one to two meals a day, and their food budget for outside of what they're being fed by the team is usually like $20 or $30 a day. So they have a real challenge getting nutrition and getting calories when they're on the road. So for them, supplements come in very, very handy. For the average person who, you know, I don't know, maybe can have a meal delivery service drop off meals to their house each day, or maybe have a partner who can prepare meals for them, or are comfortable preparing their own meals, it's not as essential. With that said, there are some great supplement tricks to enhance our metabolic performance, our mental performance, etc. I think the problem comes in with supplement marketing, to be quite honest, because the way that supplement marketing goes is, someone wants to release a new product, they come up with a laundry list of benefits that almost anyone in the world who's in their right mind would want at least one of those benefits, and then it's basically, this product does everything awesome that you could want to have done to you, so take it. And then the next product that comes out says the same thing. So it's very, very hard to decipher what these things are actually supposed to be doing to us and whether they will or not. But if you have someone in your corner who can help you make these decisions, we often look, I call these targeted molecules. So I really break up supplements into two categories, essential nutrients. So that would be your vitamins and minerals, protein, things like that. Then you have your targeted molecules. Creatine would be a great example of that. Creatine is often thought about in the sports in a sports performance game because it improves explosive power and some other components of athleticism. The interesting thing with creatine now, though, is that we're finding that the same benefits that happen in muscle actually happen in the brain because creatine just helps with energy turnover. So we actually see improvements in cognitive test scores and things like that in people who don't get enough creatine in their diet when they take creatine.
Well, I found as I'm doing the GSD that, and I wrote it to you in an email, I kind of view my creatine and BCAAs, which are the amino acids, they're like my fake carbs. Like, while I'm feeling a little bit groggy, I take those and then that kind of gets me going a bit. It's kind of astounding. I don't have any comprehension of how any of this works, but it's a little bit shocking to see it work.
Well, yeah, and that's really it. And that's a difficult part. I mean, how is someone who's stumbling onto a website or reading a book going to decipher this? I mean, I've been doing higher education for 11 years, you know, to figure this stuff out. So, you know, ultimately, my best advice for someone who wants to get this area of their life handled is to find a good coach, and maybe you don't have to hire them as a coach, but find someone who's knowledgeable and pick their brain, figure out how some of this stuff
works. A lot of people aren't knowledgeable, and this is one of the things that's been shocking me, is that you have a hell of a lot of nutritionists on your forums. I mean, there was a guy that was posting on a thread the other day, like, hey, John, thank you so much for all this advice. It's been a massive help. I've learned so much here. And then I'm like, you know, okay, whatever. And then the signature of his post is, you know, like he's a nutrition professor at a university over in the UK.
Right.
I mean, you know, like, you guys are pretty advanced on this stuff. You're thanking Tim Ferriss's latest book, The 4-Hour Body, too. I mean, what were you doing with Tim?
Tim and I have just sort of crossed paths a few times. And, Tim is well known for his 4-Hour Workweek stuff and his sort of lifestyle hacking stuff. But, you know, he's, people who don't know this, he's sort of a real avid physique manipulation, body comp, performance kind of hobbyist as well. And obviously he's made his professional foray into the area with his new book. But, you know, so over the years, just myself and some of the other experts who featured in the book, you know, we've crossed paths with Tim. We've, you know, actually one of our team members who works with Precision Nutrition actually helped with some of the writing of that project as well. So Tim used me and some of our team as a resource in the creation of the book, and we're actually working on a couple of other projects together now. It's kind of a hobby and passion for Tim to physical development and getting in shape, so our paths kind of cross that way. But, you know, getting back to your point, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of people with credentials in this field who, you know, simply don't know about all aspects of physique manipulation and performance in this capacity. Dietitians, when they go to school, they learn about clinical populations. So sick people in hospitals, what kind of infusion they may need, or, you know, what kind of nutrients they may be deficient in, or maybe how to create a hospital menu for people who are ill. That's what their training is in. So sport nutrition, exercise nutrition, it really, I mean, it's a very, very young field. And that's why it can sometimes be frustrating, because we don't have all the answers yet. This isn't a well-developed field that's been going on for years and years, and we've asked all the important questions and we've answered them. And that's why you get things like, you know, Dr. Ornish, who's talking about, no, to be healthy, you need a high-carb diet. And then you had, you know, the Zone, where it's sort of a more balanced approach. And then you had the Atkins, where it was like, no, the carb people, they're idiots. You need to go fat and low carb. And then the paleo diet. Oh, no, all those other people are idiots, because grains and legumes and beans, they'll make you sick. And now all of a sudden you have all these competing camps, and you say, what? They can't all be right, can they? Or they can't all be wrong. Oh, screw it, I'm going back to what I normally eat, right? And that's really what I think the knee-jerk reaction to all this conflicting information is. And the one thing I will say is this. I really feel like we are trained, when we start looking at new areas, so let's say it's fitness and nutrition, to look for differences. And I think we're trained by the media, and I think there's this inclination to be a critic in all of us. And so we start looking, okay, the Atkins diet, the Ornish plan, the Zone, Precision Nutrition, where are they different? And I think when we start doing that, we actually shut off the part of our brain that allows us to figure out the similarities. And it's the similarities where all the good stuff resides. You know, like I said, Precision Nutrition, the Get Shredded diet, the Atkins diet, and any fad diet that you find, whatever ridiculous name they attach to it, they all, the similarities between them all is that they find a way to get you to eat less, to get into a negative energy balance. And that's why most of them can work. The rest of the equation, though, is can you be healthy at the same time? And that's what we try and spend a lot of time figuring out. Can you be healthy and can you go to the gym and perform? You know, can you get outside and play a basketball game, or can you go for a run? Those are the types of things we want people to be able to do while they're getting lean so that they look awesome, but they can do stuff too. So anyway, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but really that's my advice for people who are trying to foray into this new area. Instead of thinking about how is all this stuff different, spend a few minutes looking for the similarities, because it activates this part of your brain that starts to synthesize concepts a lot better. You start to say, oh wait, I see the overlap points in all of these, and it becomes this beautiful picture that starts to come clearer and clearer and clearer. So what are the best practices here? Maybe I don't need to follow any one of these diets. I can discover the best practices that all of them share, and now I have this great schema for understanding this area without having to be a disciple of any particular diet. And I think it makes a huge difference when you can do that. It takes a little practice, obviously, because we're so trained to look for differences. But when you can find these like overlapping points, it's like, you know, having all these multiple pictures, and then somehow they all kind of blend into one picture that you create yourself, which is the best way to do this, when you can create your own best practices yourself.
Exactly. So, and that's, I think there's 20,000 things you have to learn. It's about figuring out exactly which ones you need to apply to yourself to make things work.
And that's it. So, I mean, your original question had to do with supplements. And really, in the end, we do what we call limiting factor analysis with new clients. So we talked about that earlier with respect to information not being the biggest limiting factor, and we look for the actual limiting factor. When it comes to supplements, we do the same. It's kind of like a needs and limiting factor analysis. We say, okay, there's all these supplements out there. Do you need any of them? I mean, there are testosterone-boosting supplements and fat-burning supplements and all kinds of stuff. Now, I wouldn't really necessarily recommend you take a testosterone-boosting supplement unless your testosterone is low. And it doesn't make any sense otherwise, does it? Or why would you take a fat-burning supplement unless you needed to lose fat? So there's all these different supplements out there that are the promise is an awesome-looking body. But then you have to look at the mechanism. How is this proposing to get me there? And do I actually need that? And so that's what we do.
Well,
on
that point, like I'm curious, because you, it doesn't seem like in some of your programs you put people through ZMA. So ZMA is a supplement that's extra zinc and magnesium.
Right.
I take it at night, and it helps me sleep. And it's actually one of the great things while I'm losing weight, because you know how it is when you're losing weight. You don't always sleep that well, and so I take some of that stuff, and it just knocks me out. And it doesn't seem to be anything too crazy. It's just extra zinc and extra magnesium.
Why would you not
suggest everybody takes that when they're trying to lose weight? Seems like a great hack.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do in our coaching programs. That's one of the things that we teach. And part of the reason why is that not everyone has a hard time with sleeping, actually. It seems like certain people, and this is fascinating to people who are new to this, when certain people start a new exercise program and start watching their diet, they think life is going to be awesome in every aspect. So they're like, I'm going to have better sex, I'm going to look better, I'm going to sleep better, everything is... So their expectations are unrealistic. They just think because they joined the gym and got a personal trainer, life is going to be great on every area. And I think that's why a lot of people quit too, because it doesn't match their expectation, because their expectation was completely wrong. But one of the areas where their expectation is always wrong is the sleep thing. They expect to sleep better, and often they don't. And the reason why many of us don't sleep better when we start exercising or start losing fat is because when we start losing fat, we're in a negative energy balance. A negative energy balance is a stressor on our body. It's a small stressor, and it leads to some good outcomes. But when we experience stress, a hormone called cortisol is released in our body. And when cortisol is high in the evening, it prevents us from sleeping. So that's a very, very common thing. So if someone's listening to this and they start an exercise program and they have a difficulty with sleeping at first, there's a very clear physiological explanation, and they're not alone. But it doesn't happen to everyone. And the other thing is the fix isn't the same for everyone. ZMA works really fantastically for some people. And the reason is because of the magnesium in the product. Another way that I sometimes recommend people get magnesium, even if they don't like supplements, is to do an evening Epsom salt bath. So Epsom salts, you can get a magnesium form of them. So it's just Epsom salts that are high in magnesium, and it'll just say magnesium salts on the bag. And if you just dump about half a cup into a tub of water, the magnesium dissolves into the water, so you can't even see it's there. But it actually then permeates into your skin just by you bathing in it. And then you get an evening burst of magnesium, which is a muscle relaxant, and it's very calming, and it helps you to sleep. So that's one solution for it, but there's another solution for it too. If high evening cortisol is the problem, there's actually a supplement that lowers evening cortisol. It's got a long scientific name. It's called phosphatidylserine, and what it does is suppress evening cortisol. So it's another trick for when you start a new program or you start losing fat and you can't sleep very well, you've got a couple different options. And everyone's different. So if you were to come to my lab and I were to measure your magnesium and your cortisol and all that stuff when you start a diet, then we can actually target in on exactly the problem, and then we figure out the best fix for you. That's what I mean by sort of this limiting factor type of analysis or this needs analysis. But it's not going to be the same for everyone. There's another product called Z12, which is fantastic at helping people get to sleep. And so some people, that's the only thing that works for. And unless we can do blood and urine and salivary analyses on every client, which we can always, unless they come see me personally, then we have to sort of guess at it a little bit. But the whole point is, you know, we do these types of supplements when you're not sleeping. We don't give them if you're sleeping just fine. And that's how supplements have to be viewed. But if you know, because the number one question I get, and I do a lot of seminars every year, I'll do this great seminar on behavior change. It'll be powerful, impactful stuff. And the five questions that I get asked at the end of the session are about supplements. And it usually goes like this: what do you think of creatine? And I'm like, okay. Well, I can tell you what I think of creatine. It has nothing to do with my presentation today. Well, what I think of creatine is, do you need creatine? Not everyone may need creatine. So I think when people are introduced to supplements, there's so much excitement around the idea that I can take this drink or this particular pill or powder and it will change me in some fundamental way and help me and give me an edge. It's a hack. It's so compelling that it's hard to be rational. And I say this with myself included, because supplement companies all the time send me products. I mean, literally a few times a week, the UPS man will show up at my door and have a big box of supplements that he didn't ask for. I didn't even know were coming. And I still can't help but feel the flutter, you know, like a little bit excited. Like, what is this awesome stuff that may change my life? And then I have to actually take that emotional side of my brain, say, okay, buddy, you need to chill. You're on time out for 5 minutes. Let's take the rational side and look at this really objectively. And when I do that, I say, what are they telling me that this is supposed to do to my physiology? And most times it's not clear. If it is clear, then I say, do I actually need that done to my physiology?
Right.
If I don't know, the answer is I'm not going to take this. If I do know and I do need it done, then I'm going to take this. And, you know, I mean, obviously easier said than done. I have a lot of training in this area, so it's a little easier for me to do this. But again, you know, that's when an expert or someone that you trust comes in really, really handy, where you can say, hey, I heard about this product. It's supposed to do this. Do you think I need that done to me? And so, again, I mean, I'm a proponent of supplements if you're using them to target specific systems that you need improvement in.
And so this is great what we just captured here. So you basically heard the moron approach to supplements, which is what I'm doing. And then you've now heard, like, because, I mean, sleep has always been a problem for me when I've tried to lose weight. And so I didn't know, like, okay, and this mysterious stuff called ZMA, and suddenly I can sleep. So that's great. And so I now make sure that I'm hungry at night when I go to bed. So then I take this and I know I can sleep. And now I've just found this, you know, four other approaches to this as well, which I wasn't aware of. And there's all these reasons and all this sort of stuff. And this is the kind of magic that John has. It's amazing to hear about it. You've got a lot of depth on this.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what I've been doing for a really long time. This area is super fun to me. The human body is amazing to me. The way that we can do small manipulations to have large improvements in the way we look and feel, it's awesome. You know, and I think the thing is, I really like people to leave some of this tinkering stuff to us and, you know, use us as a resource, but then get back to your life. Because the truth is, Adrian, I don't need you to be we'll call it a professional dieter. You just want to be in shape, right? Like, that's why I'm assuming you came to us in the first place, because you wanted to be in shape, not because you wanted to start your own supplement and nutrition website and become an expert in the field.
Well, actually, you know, I've been thinking about reading all these. No, you're, that's true. I mean, I do want to be in shape. That's true.
And that's where I think the lines sort of blur a little bit. I think sometimes people start getting into this area. They think they need to become a mini expert to actually get a handle on it, and so they read 50 books on it. They spend almost all their free time on nutrition and exercise websites, and they become essentially what we call professional dieters. They diet for a living. That's what they do. That's what they think about. It's what they ask a lot of questions about. And, I mean, while that's cool if that's the direction you want to go, I think most people would be better served to not be a professional dieter, to just get the area handled and then move on. Develop another skill, spend time with your family, grow your business, whatever. So that's really how we like to help people. We like to give them some basic best practice strategies and then send them out into the world to live their life without always counting calories and worrying about how to structure the perfect post-workout nutrition and stuff like that. Just get it handled and then move on to other things, bigger and better things.
John and I have had a discussion on the forums about asking why about things, because I do try to understand things, and maybe that's what he's alluding to a little bit. I don't know. I've struggled with this a little bit because I do like to understand how things work, and that's why I start to have a lot more confidence in what you guys talk about, is because there's a lot more understanding there, which when you look at a lot of other methodologies isn't there, and so that's, I guess, why I have more trust in what you're doing. Point taken. I know what you're saying. I'm not sure I completely agree, but I think being a professional dieter is obviously pretty stupid. But point taken.
Yeah.
So John's beating me up on my interview.
I think the truth is some of our greatest strengths, and I think I said this on the forum too, and it's probably worth saying for everyone to hear, some of our greatest strengths can become our biggest weaknesses if misapplied. So the desire to acquire information is a strong strength. But it can become a weakness if it starts to paralyze action, and only if it starts to paralyze action. In your case, I have no reason to beat you up, because how much weight have you lost in the last month?
18 pounds.
18 pounds. So you're acting. That's awesome. So you're acquiring information, and you're acting on that information in a powerful way that a lot of people don't do. So I have no cause to beat you up, but there are people out there who spend loads and loads of time reading and researching but doing nothing. They may have been the same body weight for years and years and years, and they've read 100 books and been on every website and accumulated thousands of posts. They become, you know, well-known fixtures in all the different web forums on nutrition and exercise, but they haven't changed and haven't improved. And that's where I start to see a problem. Maybe it's cool if you want to be 25% body fat, but quote-unquote know everything about food. But at a certain point, I kind of wonder how much you know if you can't be in shape yet. you know?
Yeah, well, obviously. One quick important question I need to ask that that's seen around on like other bodybuilding forums, since we're just running out of time. There's on other bodybuilding forums, there's a quote that you've seen more ass than a Studio 54 toilet seat. Could you comment on that quote?
What Studio 54?
come on, enough of this.
I guess that quote refers to...
You need to tell us about working at the Playboy Mansion. Come on, let's look.
Yeah, that's right. I guess this refers to my early days. There was a website called T-Nation, which is still around. It was originally called Testosterone Magazine. And as you'd imagine from the name, it was a lot of dudes, not too many women, interested in physique enhancement, bodybuilding, all that kind of stuff. And so, for some reason in the early days, I think people filled in what they wanted to fill in terms of knowledge of the writers on that site. But I somehow established this reputation for, I don't know, spending time with ladies. Right now I'm a happily married man with a wonderful family, so these types of things remain in the dark testosterone past.
That was such a terrible answer, John, but I'll let you get away with it. Okay. All right. Is there anything you want to mention before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot of good stuff. And really, I mean, for those people listening in, I'm assuming that if they're still with us at this point in the conversation, this area of nutrition and body composition and fat loss is something that they find important or interesting. And if they do, really, that comment I made earlier about looking for similarities between different programs and not becoming sort of a disciple of any particular system is really going to serve you well. And one of the best ways to do that is to do what Adrian's doing right now, which is a lot of self-experimentation. You know, we mentioned Tim Ferriss earlier, and in his book is basically a song of praise to self-experimentation. And a lot of what we do is the exact same thing. It's really digging deep into who you are, your habits, what your limiting factors are, and figuring out the best way to do this for your life. And you don't have to get a PhD to be a scientist on yourself. All you have to do is control a few variables, make a few changes, see how they work. If they work well, keep doing it. If they stop working, make another change. And that simple process, that's the scientific method. And in doing that, you'll learn far, far, far more about this whole game than reading loads of books on the topic. So it's really, really action. And, you know, obviously if we can help at Precision Nutrition, come see us at our site, and we'll be glad to be part of the process.
Awesome. Well, John, thanks for making the time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it, and I hope that we did some good in the world today.